Hi, it's Mark Stinson, and you found us on Unlocking Your World of Creativity. My guest today is the ever-enthusiastic and creative writer, storyteller, novelist, and app maker, Eric John Slingerup.
Unlocking Your World of Creativity with Mark Stinson.
Eric, glad to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's good to talk to you again. Eric has just signed on with Aladdin Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, to really write your debut middle grade novel. It's called Plucked. That'll come out in 2022. And then there'll be a follow-up called Smacked in 2023. So you got a nice 1-2 punch, literally plucked and smacked right as we go there. So appealing to the teens for sure.
Those titles do sound kind of punchy. It's, I catch myself, I'm still kind of giddy about it. When you say it, it sounds official. And I'm still a little in the pinch myself stage. So bear with me.
Yeah, got to embrace it, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, listen, Eric, on our show, we like to start with the lightning round rather than end with it. So we're going to go rapid fire with about 4 questions just to warm you up and put you on the hot seat a little bit. It'll be fun.
Okay.
So we're talking about creativity. What creative project, large or small, is on your desk that needs your attention right now?
Oh, I don't know if it needs my attention, but I just started a new story and it's not one that anyone's asking for, but it's one, I guess, except the back of my brain. So I'm trying to figure out this universe that is loosely inspired by my love for zombies, but if they were something else, if they behaved a little differently. That was not a lightning answer. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good lightning answer.
That's the thing on my laptop right before I started talking to you. I was kind of deep in the world of, I want to say zombie-ish. That's all I can say. That's all I have figured out right now.
I like it. And Eric, when you feel that you need an inspiration, you know, a jolt of creativeness, where do you turn?
I'm a little old school that way. I take the dog for a walk. We're lucky here. We are. I can look out my window and see the path to our one of our neighborhood parks. We've got several, and I do a stroll. I think there is a connection between like just the way we think when we're moving. I see the kids playing on the playground, and I see other people walking their dogs. I have that kind of random conversation with a neighbor or a stranger. That more than any kind of medium, that getting out in the world does it better for me.
I like it. And then when you say that you might face obstacles to your creativity, what comes up for you the most? Or I guess frequently, do you keep running into the same obstacles?
Oh, yeah. Well, the obstacle of our... It's probably the same for everyone of our modern age is technology. Technology is just so pushy now. Everything is so pushy in the way that it's designed to interfere. Like it's trying to be helpful, but I just don't need it that helpful. So I unplug, I delete all notifications. I close things down when I'm writing. I move my phone physically away from me. I do all the things so that the technology will serve me. And I say that, I love a word processor. I love a laptop. I love to take it out to a pavilion somewhere outside. I love that ability. But man, the way that all your devices are synced now, and if you're not careful, you're getting text messages on your laptop screen. I'm like, unless it's super urgent, I just didn't need to know that right now, you know, and it kind of jars me out of the world I worked so hard to try and get into for the last hour that is the thing I think everybody just needs to really be diligent in how they manage this amazing technology all around us. It's amazing and terrible.
And yet it's interrupting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I just heard a little bling.
I could not help but hear, notice the irony of a notification.
And so I thought I turned things on. That's like another. What is it? There's another device.
And it's under here. So maybe it's under the dog.
We synced our dog, too.
Yes, exactly.
Rats.
All right, final question then. A lot of our listeners are in a place where they have this creative idea, this nugget of something that they're working on, but they got to get it out into the world. What is a piece of advice coming from someone like you who has produced, published, posted, that says, get out of your own head and get it into the world?
Yeah, well... there are so many different routes to go. It really depends on the kind of thing you're making. But this is easy for me to say now because we're talking about, I'm right on the heels of this book deal and I'm super excited about it. So if you had asked me like a couple of months ago, my story would be just keep pushing. Even if you're like an old man like me and you're like past 50 now, keep going. And I don't know if it's the same message after you finally get like break into a place you wanted to bust into, like publishing, where traditionally there are a lot of gatekeepers. I know that a lot of related storytelling disciplines now are more democratized. Like there's nobody stopping you from making a movie or doing other kinds of, like the technology is all there. Like it used to be kind of cost prohibitive. It's never quite been that way, I think, for writing books. I mean, nobody can stop you from just writing the book, but you're talking about that, like getting it out there. I just think you just need to keep trying with every opportunity that comes your way. Mine came about in an unexpected way. I was in the middle of collecting rejections from those cold queries, you know, and I met somebody who knew somebody. It was one of those moments that it finally happened for me. But if I hadn't have been like kind of attuned to looking for that moment, whenever it presented itself, I might have missed it.
Mm-hmm. So you still got to be open to it.
My feeling is still have coffee with everybody. I mean, even, well,
have some kind of
virtual coffee. You still got it. I still believe you do that with everybody who asks. Kind of think more in terms of, you're always like, when you're wanting that break of getting your thing out into the world, you're so into like, what can I get out of someone? But I think the way to really move things forward for yourself is to recognize that wherever you are in the process or whatever your status is as a creator, you've got some valuable stash of something that somebody else wants, that you can be, it affords you the opportunity to be generous with a lot of people. You don't even have to be that selective. Just be generous with your stash of whatever you have that's valuable, and you will find that returns itself, I think, many times over. Have those coffees, take the calls, take the times with people, and, you know, people who, as soon as you mention book, everybody says, oh, you know, I've got an idea for a book. I'm like, oh, do you? Yes. But I think you need to have those conversations, because that's how you give that energy back into the community and give those people a leg up, because that's what someone did for you at some point.
Wow, that's very good. All right, well, that completes our lightning round. Now that's you survived. Ooh, that was the hot seat. Yeah. So let's back up and kind of get into these creative endeavors. This is the first time I've talked with you as a children's book author. You know, I loved following your developing of the Story Snacker app. Mm-hmm. So maybe we pick up from there. You know, okay. A story of talking about technology, but how you really embrace this technology for some bite-sized stories on an app platform. I just thought that was a nice combination of things.
It was really fun to do, and it still is. In fact, I will, I'll give you the scoop on this. I haven't announced this yet, but we are just about to open up that. So Story Snacker, just to back up, it's a snack-sized stories for parents on the go. They're one-minute stories. They're a collection made for your iPhone. Back to my love-hate relationship with technology as a parent. I've always struggled with being a good parent if my phone is like distracting me. And I know I'm not the only one there, so I wanted to have something on there that could help parents actually be better in the act of parenting rather than compete with it sometimes. So it was really fun to make. All the stories on there are mine, but we wanted to open up the platform to other writers and illustrators. And I currently have several who are developing stories and illustrations to just add some different diversity of voices on the platform. And I'm really excited about it. We're probably several weeks away from making that update, but really excited about it. And that is, apps are one of the things that there aren't really gatekeepers in, that you can just go, you don't need to get you need to get approval from Apple, but I mean, they're not the ones deciding if it's worthy. They're just, mm-hmm. they're making sure it works, you know? So there are some hurdles to go through there, but you don't have to go to the app. You just have to find the right people, you know, a developer, a digital designer, team up with those people and decide, hey, let's go make this. Mm-hmm. And we just made it. It took a long time because it was a side gig for all of us for a couple of years, but it was nice just to make it and have it in the world. That's been fun. You know, yeah. Last year we were nominated for a Webby, which was super exciting, along with four other super heavy hitters. They were all like PBS Kids or Random House or all these like, so we got ranked with them as one of the top five apps for family and kids in the world because it's a global competition. And we're like, that's great for the couple of hundred users who know about us. That's fantastic.
That's a great list to be on.
Yeah. So we were super happy with that. And we still have yet to like really fire up the marketing machine on that because we've still been playing with it and tweaking it. But we're really happy with what we've made. And everybody who interacts with it is too. We're just still waiting to get a little traction on that. The fun thing is that, I don't know if you know this, one of the snack size stories on that app is actually the nugget for the story I got the book deal on.
Ah, very good.
Yeah, it's a 160-word story that I made a 45,000-word version, a novelized version for that well now is going to be a multi-book series. Just because I wanted to play with the idea that how many versions can you tell a story in? Mm-hmm. Like, can you do it in a minute? Can you do it in a multi-chapter way? Is it still, like, how does that change the nature of the story? So that was fun as an exercise for me. But it's just one of those stories that kept picking away. Like, I think there's a little more here.
That's awesome. And so along the way, a couple of picture books for kids. Mm-hmm. Tell me about those.
Yeah. So the first picture book I published was way back when it was called Dirt Boy. And that was back in 2000. And that was a different time in my life. I was a younger man then. I had a lot more juice. I wrote that book in between. I wrote the first draft of that book in between. I don't want to sound too martyrish, but it was in between two jobs. And I was working as a copywriter during the day, and I was still waiting tables at night because my first advertising job, I got paid so little, I actually made more money at the restaurant. And I already had a family then. So like I was just hustling all the time, working till like midnight. And most of the other waiters smoked. So they take these smoke breaks. So I took, just to make it fair, I took writing breaks. And I wrote that book, Dirt Boy, in a little alley that they called the smoke hole by the trash bin. And it was like the perfect inspiration for writing a book like Dirt Boy that was all about gross dirt, you know, a kid who doesn't take a bath. Like, it was the perfect environment. I wrote it over a series of several months in 5-minute increments, you know? And I can't work that way. Now, that doesn't do anything for me. Now, I know that I need much larger chunks of time to write middle grade, but at the time, that's what worked. And I published, I got the book deal right as I was moving to take an agency job that took me to Ohio. And then I subsequently published a couple of more books. I published Monsterlicious and a Christmas book. And they did all right. But at the time, the advertising career was just louder. Mm-hmm. Like it was asking more. And every time you get a offer to, you get promoted or you do what, you move up the chain. And meanwhile, I wanted to publish another picture book, but I was too tired at night. And I was getting older and I was busier. And I'd meet some kind of obstacle and you just follow what's generating a response. So, you know, 20 years later, I'm like, oh, I still wanted to write some more books. I finally was able to kind of find a moment where I could get off that train with advertising. And it was a super fun train. It was great. It was a very fulfilling career. It was a 25-year career. You know, I feel luckier than most, but I also was ready to something different full time. And I do think in a lot of ways, being a copywriter and a creative director for so many years helped me to be a better middle grade novelist. If you write ad copy for years, you're accustomed to writing so tight that I have since been told that the first time somebody submits their manuscript, it's too fat and they have to really like do some hard cuts. Mine was the opposite. My manuscript was too tight. It was like so lean. They were like, you know, you can just let this breathe a little.
Let that out a little.
Yeah, to give you an idea, I think we increased the word count by almost like more than 25% from the original manuscript. It went from 32,000 words, which is a pretty middle grade novels are between 30 and 50,000 words usually. My understanding of that is like compared to say an adult novel is up to 80,000 words, or some are even long, you know, some sci-fi epics are poems that are, but for me, writing 30, 40, 50,000 words, that is huge because I'm used to sweating over 100 words for a couple of days for like for a magazine ad, you know, and making sure every single word is just doing as much lifting as it can. And that's how I approached writing a novel, which is, I think, different than other people who come up through a different discipline where you're just, you feel a little more flexible to like, you know, just have some fluff in there. Mine was all like just bone, you know?
bone.
Yeah, it's ready to go.
Yeah, so you raise a good point though, and let's talk about the essence of a great story then. You know, because it seems to be the core of what we're talking about, whether it's 161 words or whether it's 40,000 words. Mm-hmm. What is your approach to the story development?
I'm a little different than, I start with plot first before character. I feel like character is often defined by the predicament in which they find themselves. So I just need stuff to happen. And then for my own reading habits, it's partially I'm writing for myself in a way that I like some action. I want to care about the characters that are in the middle of that action. So it is important to flesh out those characters. But I start with what is happening to them and what's their reaction to that. So this first book, this 11-year-old girl is minding her own business and her brother mysteriously gets plucked up by a giant robot and swallowed. That's the thing. That's the predicament. And what is her response to that? I don't really have her sit in her feelings for pages and pages prior to that. There's a little bit of setup until you understand like, okay, she's a little isolated here. She doesn't have a lot of other people to depend on here. And that was fun. But that got kind of fleshed on after the predicament was figured out. I enjoyed doing that later because I enjoyed like going like, oh, I know what's going to happen to her. So I want to set up her constitution psychologically so that we can see, it'll be that much more satisfying when you see that she reacts this way and that way. And what are some of the broader themes in a story afterwards? But that's all comes after the action. And I'm on the hook now with this sequel because I did not know how this worked, but I wrote the first book as a standalone, and I wrote that it had series potential, air quotes, because I heard that's what helps middle grade sell. I had no idea what the sequel would be. Mm-hmm. And then my agent said, well, what if you were to write the sequel, you know, and oh, wait, I really have to think about this. So I did a page and a half treatment. Well, the sequel could do this. To my surprise, they bought the sequel. Unfinished. So I'm working on that now. That's one of the projects, one of my must-dos is I'm on the hook contractually to produce that sequel. And it also has like, it's no longer a robot. There's a monster. That's all I'm going to.
You heard it here first, people.
Yes. There's a beastie. I wanted the solution of book one to produce a problem for book two. I wanted so that they kind of lock together in that way. I realized that, oh, there's enough of the universe here to create, to continue with the story. There's a second and possibly more. But it all starts with kind of, in my mind, the catalyst for the story is what's the thing happening. Because once you have that figured out, like you know that this character, Molly, she's going to have to chase this robot through the woods. And there's all kinds of fun things that I think, oh, scene by scene, what's going to happen? She's going to fall into his footprint, of course. You know, oh, she's going to have to go inside the robot to see like what happened to her brother, like all these other things. And oh, she's going to nearly get eviscerated by all the gears and cogs and such, like all these other things are going to lend themselves to like part of the like scene by scene development of her character arc. But that's very action oriented.
Love it.
I know authors who approach it completely the other way, start character first, and I respect that too.
Well, that's why I asked, because you do see these. So I guess also then you're raising some good tools, exercises, the formula, you know, mm-hmm. and I think there'll be writers out there listening who might be interested in the tools that you use. I mean, are you an index card guy, or do you have paper all over your floor? Are you using a program, an app to organize these pages and thoughts? You know, give us a little nuts and bolts.
I tried indexing, and I think I might like it. I confess I didn't do that for the first book, but I now realize I had no idea what I was doing. I made a ton of rookie mistakes that my agent was gracious enough to help me through. And we went back and forth and just beat up that manuscript. I mean, she loved the core idea, but I'm going to save myself a lot of pain, I think, with mapping out a few things in this one that I did not do in the first one. The index cards, I think, are helpful. An outline, you know, people always talk about, for novelists, are you a, I don't know if you heard the terms, are you a plotter or a pantser? Mm-hmm. And I think I'm still kind of in the middle there. And I've heard that people move gradually from being pantsers to plotters, and that may be my trajectory. I don't know that yet. So outlining is helpful. I also like doing, I have a couple of big poster boards on the dining room table because I'm very visual. So I kind of write things out, and I sometimes even draw, I have to draw a map, like a north, south, east and west oriented map, like where are people going? So I keep track of physically where the action is moving. I do a couple of those things, but they're mostly more for the architecture of the story, like what works for me. Mostly I just try to get on what I'm excited about and write it, you know, and just get that fever and do that. And that's why when I mentioned to you, I was like, you said, what do you need to be working on right now? Well, I probably need to be working on something else, but I had this crazy idea about this zombies that aren't zombies. And I just like, I got to get it down and ride that for a couple of days. And I think if I have any tools, it's more about trying to just capture that. I could misattribute. I think it's Oscar Wilde. Like I said, one of my favorite quotes, I think it's him. He said, the only way to overcome a temptation is to yield to it.
There you go.
So I think it's that way with writing. Like if you're feeling drawn to something else, I think just go give that your energy for a minute and then you can come back. That's helpful for me because I'd rather have a productive day starting, even if that means I have a couple of books in the works, than hit my head against the wall on that project that I know I need to work on, but I'm not feeling it at that moment. I don't want to lose a day.
No, I hear you. Well, this has been a terrific conversation. I've kind of heard a thread as we started there I wanted to circle back on. And that is this idea of connections and sort of collaboration, but you didn't know it was going to be collaborative. The agent could have been a nuisance, but it actually was a help. Tell us about these connectors, both the people and the events that would keep your project moving forward.
Well, I'm glad you found a connection. I thought I was just rambling.
Where was I going with that thought?
This is good. I'm glad that was making, there was some thread. Yeah. Well, I did not realize how collaborative I was by nature, but I think that's where your training in a different discipline can really help you and give you perspective when you make a switch. Because advertising by its nature is very collaborative. You're working with art directors and designers and account people and others and to create something. So it kind of lowers the bar a little bit and makes you less precious about your craft, about every word, because you feel like if you just get your idea through, it is a win, you know?
That's a good day.
You're not hanging on every single word in a way like you're trying to fight the big fight. Like, did I get my idea through? So I'm actually, at this moment right now, I am awaiting the edit letter from my new editor at Simon Schuster. And she's great. We had a phone call. She is absolutely delightful. I mean, compared to the world I had lived in before, not that it was harsh, I just, the affectionate language that people in literature use, I'm not accustomed to people saying things like, oh, this story has my heart, or I adored, you know, this XYZ part of the story, like whatever, like it's very it's very affectionate. It's very sweet. And so my agent and now the editor will go through these changes, and they're super gracious and careful about saying, no, these are just suggestions. And I'm like, hey, I've had my copy eviscerated for a quarter century. Like,
yes, you're quite familiar with the red pen.
Yeah, I've had it where I don't even recognize it's mine anymore. So like, this is fine. But that level of collaboration, I welcome it. And I like to, my first thought is, how can I incorporate that insight before I try and be defensive about it? And I think that comes, I had someone help me recognize this. I think that comes from, if I look at my life 10 years ago, maybe it would, I went through some changes where there were some core aspects of my life based on some assumptions that I now no longer quite hold for me. I realized I was wrong about some things. Like there were some of the biggest things in life I realized I was wrong about. And that was very freeing for me. I always approach someone's feedback with, oh, the first reaction is they're probably right and I'm probably wrong. And that has been helpful for me, because then if I find out, like if I come to the conclusion that maybe I am right about it, I have to really give that its rigor. You know, it's not my default to go, oh, no. The words, as I have arranged them on the page, are actually perfect in their current. No, probably not. As an example, I was guilty, I'm so embarrassed about it now, but I was guilty in this first book of having what I now know is a roaming POV. Didn't even realize it. But I have some authors that I look up to that do that in a way that I'm not, like, does not work for my story. And I was trying to interject some of my love for their writing styles, and I would go on these tangents, and like all of a sudden the point of view would move from the main character in some unclear way into the head of some woodland animal that had nothing to do with the story, but it was a really funny joke. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, kind of like omniscient point of view. I just like switch over there all of a sudden. Everyone I gave it to was like, yeah, that's not, we see what you're trying to do.
Yeah,
that's not
you lost me on that one. Yeah.
It was super helpful. I'm like, okay, you know what? I will save that hilarious joke for another day. It doesn't fit. It doesn't serve the story. And if that's collaboration, then I think that's, I mean, it's probably better. It's also, somebody else can see your story in ways that they can see the strengths of your story that might be invisible to you. Like I did not realize that this is how we sold the story. Five words, iron giant with a girl. And I was like, no, that's not, I mean, it's not iron giant at all. I love iron giant, but that seems derivative. No, listen, iron giant with a girl, you'll sell the book. Sure enough, that worked. And I realized I had written I have a very, very feminist story. That was unintentional. I am very pro woman. I have,
you didn't set out to write this.
It was not the intention. Yeah. I'm surrounded by inspiring female figures in my life in a way that I wasn't in an earlier part of my, you know, I'm the oldest of four boys. My first two children were boys. My brother was only having, I only had nephews. I didn't have nieces. And then now I find myself later in life, I'm now surrounded by girls. I'm having children again later in life. And now I'm just, it's all girls all the time. That's been my experience. So of course, naturally, those are the people inspiring me in my writing in a way that I didn't recognize. So I'm writing this tough, like very resourceful, inventive girl who's the main character. And my agent says, oh, this is going to be perfect in the, you know, that movement of STEM for girls. This is right. I mean, this is so timely right now for that. I'm like, oh, really? I was just writing kind of, it just popped out of my
head. Go with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, because of that insight, we strengthen some of those aspects, like the moments when she's having her kind of MacGyver moment. Like we go all the way with that because we realized, oh, that's really, it's a strength of the story. It's a cool part. It's really who this character is. She's leaning on her own wits to make it, I mean, to survive. I probably wouldn't have recognized it in that way without someone else telling me, oh, no, here's what you wrote. No. Wait, you're telling me what I wrote? Ah, okay. I got it. So in that way, collaboration is great. And I think everybody should be really open to just beating up your own assumptions for a minute. And you might find you're right on some, but I think you might find you're you can be enlightened on some too.
Yeah. Well, Eric, where can people find you, connect with you, engage with you, follow the developments of these stories?
Oh, I have become a little more active on the Twitter machine. Twitter used to be, not to be judgmental, but kind of a dark and toxic place that I would occasionally visit and be scared about. But I since have found the middle grade literature universe on Twitter is delightful. So I'm on Twitter, Eric Slangerup. There aren't too many Slangerups in the world, so I'm really easy to find. I think I'm at Eric Slangerup, also on Instagram. Those are probably where you'll find me the most often.
Eric, what a great conversation. Great catching up with you, exchanging these ideas, and just hearing how things are going for you. I really appreciate you sharing.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, well, all the best with your future creative endeavors. Get these things out in the world, as they say.
Planning to. Thank you.
Unlocking your world of creativity with Mark Stinson. Copyright 2020.
Join me again next time with more on how to tap into your most original thinking, get inspiration from experts' own experiences, and gain specific tools, exercises, and formulas to help organize your ideas. And most of all, learn to make the connections and create the opportunities to get your creative work out into the world.